to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October the 26th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a slight chance of snow. Actually, we've already had a little bit of snow here in Iowa City. Winds will be from the north at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of 33 and 34 in Iowa City, following to a low this evening of 19 in Cedar Rapids and 20 here in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 6:09 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow is at 7:33 a.m. for a total daylight period of 10 hours and 37 minutes. And now from the front page of today's Gazette, hit on Iowa Road Fund not as bad as feared. This is a story by Rod Bosshart of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau, and from Des Moines. While Iowa's transportation revenue has been reduced with less driving during the COVID-19 pandemic, state planners say the negative impact has been less than feared, and they likely won't delay highway improvements and other construction projects they expected to complete during fiscal 2021. Receipts that flowed into the state's road use fund from June 20 to October 20 from state taxes on fuel, vehicle registrations, and car sales were about $40 million below the $744 million the Iowa Department of Transportation had projected for that period, said Stuart Anderson, director of Iowa DOT's Planning, Programming, and Modal Division. While the state's share is running about 4%, down from last fiscal year, the drop is nothing like what department officials feared shortly after the coronavirus pandemic hit Iowa in March, and Governor Kim Reynolds' emergency shutdown order caused a 40% drop in traffic on Iowa roads. Back in the spring when all this started, we really had a lump in our throat, said Scott Newhard, a spokesman for the Associated General Contractors of Iowa. But as time has progressed, it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. Since then, Anderson said, overall vehicle traffic on Iowa roadways is about 90% of its normal volume, while commercial passenger numbers at Iowa airports are only about 35 to 40% of normal. However, recent weekly numbers from the Transportation Security Administration have crept closer to 50%. The decline in state aviation fuel tax has reduced the number of state-funded projects. But Anderson said the improving vehicle traffic numbers have enabled transportation officials to proceed with plans for highway construction projects that had been temporarily delayed. We did delay putting some projects out for bid just to make sure we had enough funding to get through the construction season without impacting any projects that are underway, he said. We feel like now that it is not as negative as we feared originally, that we will be able to go ahead and put those projects out for bid this year. Overall, Iowa DOT officials forecast state collections into the road use tax fund in fiscal 2021 would total about $1.766 billion by June 30, 2021. While fuel tax receipts are lagging slightly, Anderson said, vehicle registration fees have remained steady, and a high demand for used vehicles has offset a drop in new car sales. While we don't like to see a reduction in the road use fund receipts, this is not as dramatic as other states have faced, said Newhard, who praised Iowa officials for not relying solely on fuel tax revenue to finance transportation needs. We are dealing with realities of the COVID-19 pandemic, but we're not stymied by this, so that's a good thing. According to the Iowa DOT website, road use tax fund money is distributed by formula, with 47.5% going to the primary road system, 24.5% to secondary county roads, and 8% to farm-to-market county roads, and 20% for city streets. That would mean the $40 million reduction is roughly split evenly among state and local government entities. While we were prepared for a more challenging situation, fortunately, at least on the highway side, the revenue has bounced back, although at a lower than normal level, Anderson said. But we're still able to proceed with our program pretty much intact. $40 million is significant, but it's not as significant as we had expected or feared early on in the pandemic. So that's actually significantly better than we had originally feared when we saw traffic drop by over 40% in mid-April, he added. Iowa DOT officials are monitoring the transportation numbers closely. They could have to revisit the five-year plan recently passed by the Iowa Transportation Commission if the trend toward reduced vehicle traffic persists for an extended period, Anderson said. Although discussions at the federal level over another COVID-19 stimulus package could provide funding to backfill lost revenue at the state level, he noted. That five-year plan includes modernizing Iowa's highway system and enhancing safety, though more than half the money over the next 5 years will be spent on rural projects. A small share of transportation program funding comes from the state's Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund, which is funded by state gaming receipts, also hit hard by the pandemic. The fiscal 2020 funding of $6.9 million has been cut to $3.65 million for things like the State Recreational Trails Program and infrastructure programs for airports, public transportation, and rail. Also from today's front page, Branstad sees troubling shift under old friend. Former Iowa governor reflects on 3 years in China. He still calls him old friend, but former U.S. Ambassador to China, Terry Branstad, is disappointed in the direction China has moved under Xi Jinping's leadership. I will say that the personal relationship, I think, has been very good, said Branstad, who recently returned to Iowa after more than 3 years as the ambassador to China. The two first met in 1985, when Branstad was governor and Xi was a county-level Chinese official leading an agriculture delegation to Iowa. Last week, during a campaign appearance with Republican candidates in Solon, the former Iowa governor spoke warmly of Xi's welcoming him to China with a personal and private audience. Xi and his wife, Ping Li Wan, also hosted a dinner for Branstad, his wife Christy, and their family. To the best of my knowledge, and in talking to people at the embassy, that had never been done before for one of our ambassadors, he said. Despite the friendship and accomplishments in trade and law enforcement, Branstad called serving as ambassador one of the most challenging and difficult assignments. It was made more difficult by the increasingly authoritarian actions of the communist government under Xi, he said. The action they've taken against the people in Hong Kong, mistreatment of the Uyghurs, I think is unconscionable, Branstad said, referring to the Muslim minority in northwest China. So I did have discussions with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to express our objections. It was not a one-way conversation. The Chinese government let Branstad know of its objections to U.S. actions. As ambassador, Branstad focused on critical issues such as trade, helping get China's support for sanctions on North Korea, and helping obtain cooperation from China to make fentanyl a controlled substance. I'm proud of the fact that we were able to get that accomplished, and we're still working with them on law enforcement on those issues, he said. Reaching an agreement on phase one of a trade pact already is paying benefits for Iowa farmers, Branstad said. Though a comprehensive trade deal with China has not been reached, China recently made record purchases of corn, soybeans, pork, beef, and chicken. Branstad said it also committed to opening up more opportunities for insurance and financial services and for protecting intellectual property rights. It was quite a long and difficult ordeal to get that agreement, but it's making a real difference, Branstad said. For the first time, we really had an agreement that is committed to fairness and reciprocity in trade, something that was long overdue. China is the United States' biggest rival as the second largest economy in the world, but at the same time, they are also a huge market. Branstad said he left his post with respect for the Chinese people, who he found to be hardworking. They're very committed to education and to their families. However, he was disappointed in that government's response to the novel coronavirus. I really think their system is a real problem, Branstad said about Chinese officials whose secretiveness, he said, led to an attempt to cover up COVID-19. People at the local level that discover something that's bad are afraid to tell people in Beijing because they know what will happen in their system. They get fired. They get punished. As a result of the COVID-19 spread, he believes China has lost credibility because not only did this happen, but they also then tried to blame the American military, the Europeans, and other people for it. So that's a tragic thing, and its impact cost a lot of lives throughout the world, and it's obviously caused a lot of economic damage throughout the world. As ambassador, he oversaw the evacuation of 1,100 State Department personnel as the virus spread. All have returned to China now. They underwent testing before leaving the United States when they arrived back in China, and again 14 days later, he said, only two tested positive for COVID-19. And here are a couple of articles from the Iowa Today section. The first from Cedar Rapids, Hawkeye Downs to offer an indoor dog park. Select Wednesday nights through March, Hawkeye Downs will be hosting an indoor off-leash dog park for local pups. We know Iowa winters can be hard on pets and their owners, and this year is no exception with COVID-19 concerns. Jen Draper, executive director and events manager at Hawkeye Downs, said, our space provides an ideal location to allow for plenty of social distancing and room to run. Dates for the dogs to explore the climate-controlled environment of the South Expo Hall are November 4 and 18, December 2 and 16, January 6 and 20, February 3 and 24, and March 10. The North Hall will feature a mini vendor market. This component allows vendors who have experienced a hard summer for sales to continue vending into the winter, Draper said. Cost is $5 per dog with free admission for owners. Vendors, staff, and patrons will be asked to wear a mask while in the building. Hand sanitizing and pet cleanup stations will be provided. And from Iowa City, Iowa City Farmers Market extends its season. The Iowa City Farmers Market season is extending into December. Iowa City nonprofit Field to Family announced it will hold late season markets for 5 additional weeks after the summer market ends October 31. The markets will be November 7, 14, 21, and December 5 and 12. Field to Family ran the downtown Iowa City Farmers Market this summer in partnership with the City Parks and Recreation Department. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, the market had a virtual shopping and curbside pickup format for the first time, with customers picking up their pre-bagged orders from the Chauncey Swan parking garage. The partnership with the city ends at the end of October, and order pickup will move to Field to Family's warehouse at 840 South Capitol Street. Customers can place orders online at orders.fieldtofamily.org on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and pick them up Saturdays. Because of the location change and a smaller selection as the growing season winds down, the market will cap at serving 200 people. Currently, it can serve up to 500 customers a week. Field to Family Communication and Events Coordinator Julia Posca said the extension is in response to customer and vendor demand. Since fall started to turn, we've had so many people asking, when will this end? Will there be a winter market, she said. If there's so much demand and our vendors have been enjoying it and seen success from it, there's no reason not to keep offering those services in our community. As of October 17, the summer market had distributed 10,329 orders, contributing $452,783 to local farmers and vendors. Customers also made $13,000 in donations to the nonprofit's Farm Stands program, which provides free, locally grown produce to Johnson County households experiencing food insecurity. Field-to-Family Director Michelle Kenyon said extending the market also helps the organization continue its mission of connecting local farmers with consumers. When the pandemic started, the nonprofit's food hub saw a precipitous drop in the customers they planned to serve, schools, restaurants, and the University of Iowa. At the same time, they saw an increase in demand from individuals. The farmers market was a way to adapt to that. Our food hub had to go back to the table and pivot to where the need is, and we want to meet the demand where it continues to grow, Kenyon said. Turning to today's opinion page, we have a guest column from Caleb Gates, who has 10 years of experience working with refugees and immigrants, and he currently works for the Catherine McCauley Center in Cedar Rapids. His column is entitled, As You Vote, Remember Those Who Can't. In the days ahead, we will witness an historic anomaly. Millions will fill out a ballot and vote for our leaders. Democratic with a small d, elections have existed for but a small sliver in the history of our species. Even today, many people around the world lack the right and ability to vote in a free and fair election. Such rights and form of government were not free. Many have fought and died to give us the right to vote. Many inhabitants of this country long to exercise this right, but cannot. They are our neighbors, the parents and older siblings of our children's schoolmates. They are business owners, medical students, scientists developing COVID-19 vaccines. They are roofers and contractors who repaired your roof and house from damage caused by the derecho. They pay taxes and work to provide for their children. They struggle to find childcare and pray together before dinner. They worry about contracting COVID-19. They grow our food and prepare our dinner. This election will affect them and their families, but they have no say in the outcome. Unlike many reading this, they were not born in the United States. Some can become citizens in the future. Many cannot. For those who cannot, there is no line for them to wait in, no path to naturalized citizenship. They do not have $1.8 million to invest in the United States. They do not have the highly specialized education or skills to fill one of the few jobs that lead to citizenship. They have built a life here and may have a citizen spouse or children, but under current law, these Americans will never receive full membership in the country they call their own. Many fled war or persecution. Others came to join family. Still others fled poverty and came here seeking a better life. The land of opportunity and freedom beckoned. As you vote in this election, you should consider how your vote will affect you and your family. Pandemics and natural disasters clarify your family's needs. You also want the best for our country. You have a stake in this election, but this election has consequences for many who have no voice at the ballot box. As you vote, remember those who cannot. As you fill out your mail-in ballot, picture the parents of your children's classmates and explain to them how your vote will affect them. Will your vote help keep this family together? Or will your vote increase the odds that mom or dad will be separated from their children, deported to a country they left years or decades ago with little or no prospect they could ever be reunited with their children again? Or, as you go to vote early, imagine that business owner and explain your vote to them. Will your vote elect officials who will work to allow that business owner to become a citizen so they can contribute, so they can continue paying taxes, creating jobs, enriching the community? Or, as you go to the polls on election day, envision those roofers and contractors who fixed your home after the derecho, who work hard to provide for their children, and explain your vote to them. Will your vote help ensure that they can continue to work, providing essential services and steady income for their families? Answer those questions not only in your vote for president. Your choice for president is key for immigrants and refugees, because the president appoints people to key leadership positions within the Department of Justice, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, and the Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration, and the Office of Refugee Resettlement. The decisions made by these individuals will intimately affect the lives of these immigrant and refugee families for the next 4 years and for life. The president also can issue executive and administrative orders that improve the lives of immigrant families or make their lives a living hell. Yet your vote for other federal, state, and local officials also will greatly impact these individuals and families. Laws to help or hurt immigrant families must pass the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. Think, who are candidates for U.S. Senate and House who will improve the lives of immigrants and refugees? State senators and representatives play a large role in determining the direction of our state and whether Iowa will welcome or spurn our immigrant neighbors. Consider which Iowa State Senate and state representative candidates will welcome them. Local officials, be they county supervisor, mayor, city council, or county sheriff, also play an important role in whether our city and county will embrace our immigrant friends. If you can vote, vote. And as you vote, remember those who can't. This article by Caleb Gates, who works at the Catherine McCauley Center in Cedar Rapids. And our letters to the editor today, we have three of them. The first coming from Rich Hillier of Cedar Rapids, entitled Looking for Consistency Among Pro-Life Voters. When the same people who are anti-abortion because they don't want their tax dollars paid to perform them finally stand up and say stop spending our tax dollars on weapons of mass destruction because all killing is wrong, then I will take them seriously. You can't be pro-war and also be anti-abortion. Sorry, folks, you can't pick and choose who you want to kill. It doesn't work that way. And that by Richard Hillier of Cedar Rapids. The next letter comes from George and Shirley Rudy of Cedar Rapids. Their letter is entitled, America Needs Joe Biden. We're backing Joe Biden for president this year. Why? Take it by the letter. B. Back to rationality, decency, and character in the White House. We desperately need a return of all three to the Oval Office. I, standing for intelligent. He has the intelligence to listen to experts and surround himself by the smartest people. Biden is secure enough to know that doing that strengthens a president. It doesn't weaken him. He has a thorough grasp of domestic and international affairs. He's smart. And D, standing for democracy, the cornerstone of the Democratic Party, and its standard bearer, Joe Biden. Crucially, at this time, he's the protector of democracy, an issue we've rarely had to face since 1776 and two world wars. Great nations fall, not because of outward forces, but because of inward forces. In 2020, We are in imminent danger. E for experience. Joe doesn't have to learn the ropes. He's been in the ring of global affairs for years. He's respected by world leaders and will lead America back to its former niche of preeminence. And N, never. Joe Biden will never be a patsy for foreign nations wanting to do America harm. He will always stand strong and firm for America, arm in arm with allies, a formidable foe to enemies and dictators. America needs the likes of Joe Biden like we've never needed the likes of a decent, rational, experienced leader before. They say we're at a turning point in history. Make no mistake, we are. Do your part and vote. That letter by George and Shirley Rudy of Cedar Rapids. And our last letter today comes from Thomas Lackner of Cedar Rapids. Thomas's letter is entitled Restart National Service. Bravo, Bob Watson, a retrospective 50 years after fighting for my country on October 19. My brother and I have been having this discussion for 20 years with anyone who will listen and not a few who won't. Everyone, male and female, regardless of status, owes their country 2 years of service. No exceptions, no exemptions, not even for bone spurs. It doesn't have to be active duty military service, although that would be the default. It could be building trails in national parks, teaching in inner city schools, or patching highways. We all benefit from our nation, and we all owe something in return. The point is, it must be national service. With only one deferment for up to 4 years of education after high school. Many countries do this, not least Israel and Switzerland. National service is the great leveler. It teaches us the worth of others and the dignity of labor, to say nothing of providing valuable skills. National service also teaches equality and humility, two things our nation could use some of these days. Once again, bravo, Bob Watson. And that letter by Thomas Lackner of Cedar Rapids. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October the 26th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Cedar Rapids, Elaine J. Corrigan, age 84, died peacefully on Wednesday, October 21. A private funeral mass will be held at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids. Burial will be at St. Joseph Cemetery. The Bras Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids is serving the family. From Cedar Rapids, Evelyn M. Laycock passed away from complications of COVID-19 on Friday, October the 23rd. With regret, we will be postponing the memorial service for Evelyn until a time when it will be safe for many to gather, worship, and sing. The burial will be held privately with immediate family only at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Monticello, Larry Guilford, age 89, died peacefully on Saturday, October 24, at his home following a brief illness. Friends may call from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Thursday, October 29, at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello, where private family services will follow. Interment will be in the Oakwood Cemetery. From Edgewood, Teresa and Anna Taken passed peacefully in her home on October 19 after a long and courageous fight with a rare neurological illness, progressive supranuclear palsy. The visitation for Teresa will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 28 at the Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Edgewood, Iowa. Graveside service is at 11 a.m. Thursday, October 29 at St. Mark Catholic Cemetery in Edgewood and interment in the St. Mark Catholic Cemetery. From Springville, Joanne Reese, age 94, passed away on Saturday, October 24 at her daughter's home. The family will greet friends from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, October 29, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, where a funeral service will follow beginning at 11 a.m. Burial will take place at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. And from St. Paul, Minnesota, Ruby Bell Cornish died peacefully with her family by her side on Wednesday, October the 14th, at the age of 93. Ruby Bell will be laid to rest in St. John's Cemetery in Cedar Rapids at a private gathering. From Hopkinton, Kenneth Raymond Smith, age 80, passed away on Thursday, October 22, at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester. Private family graveside funeral service is at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 31, at the Hopkinton City Cemetery. Visitation is from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 30, at the Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. A celebration of life sharing will be at 6:30 p.m. With Mark Smith leading. And from Whittier, John J., also known as Jack Streif, age 74, died on Saturday, October 24, at his home. A private family service at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories will be held. The service will be live streamed at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 28, and may be viewed at client.tribucast.com. Entombment is in Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. There will be a visitation on Tuesday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the State Room at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. And from Guttenberg, Dwayne Henry Hagen died on Wednesday, October 21, at the Guttenberg Municipal Hospital at the age of 90. Arrangements are being handled by the Twyk Allen Funeral Home at 207 South 1st Street in Guttenberg. A funeral service will be at St. John's Lutheran Church in Guttenberg at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 28. The family will greet friends from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 28, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Guttenberg. Interment will be at the Guttenberg City Cemetery. And from Keystone, Judith Ann Garbers, age 79, passed away at Mercy Hospital, surrounded by nurses and doctors who cared for her on Thursday, October 22, after a brief illness. A private memorial mass will be held at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Van Horn on Wednesday, October 28. Visitation will take place at the Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 27. From Marion, Robert, also known as Bob A. Burroughs, age 76, passed away on Friday, October the 23rd. A private memorial service will be held on Saturday, October 31, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, with full military honors accorded by the U.S. Air Force Honors Detail. Interment will be at Shiloh Cemetery in Hiawatha at a later date. And from Iowa City, Eric, also known as Ricky Fry, age 56, died on Thursday, October 22, at Mercy Hospice House in Hiawatha. A private family services are being planned. No public gathering is scheduled. And from Solon, Constance, also known as Connie K. Lund, age 82, died on Tuesday, October 20, at the Hallmark Care Center in Mount Vernon. Services will be held at a later date. And in other death notices from Cedar Rapids, Grace Christensen, age 75, died Sunday, October 25. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Also from Cedar Rapids, James A. Crowell, age 78, died Thursday, October 22. The Popich Kuba Funeral Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Claremont, Sylvan James Taylor, age 86, died Friday, October 23. The Shudi Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Claremont is assisting the family. From Keystone, Helen Wiley, age 96, died Saturday, October 24. The Phillips Funeral Home in Keystone is assisting the family. From Marion, Tammy L. Courtney, age 55, died Friday, October 23rd. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. And from McGregor, Lois Fanny Davis, age 84, died Saturday, October 24. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in McGregor is assisting the family. From Middle Amana, Lorraine May Zerny, age 92, died on Saturday, October 24. The Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo is assisting the family. And from Newhall, Marion F. Frank, age 94, died Sunday, October 25. The Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton is assisting the family. And from Sigourney, Rick Faust, age 69, died Saturday, October 24. The Powell Funeral Home in Sigourney is assisting the family. From Strawberry Point, Ronald Dean Peak, age 78, died Saturday, October the 24th. The Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Strawberry Point is assisting the family. And in other deaths, Sharon L. Arnson, age 83, of Dubuque, died Friday, October 23. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. And from today's sports page, CCA's club commits to Iowa State. From Tiffin, a week after her season came to a hollow end, Kalia Club finally had some good news. A junior hitter from Clear Creek Amana, Club announced her commitment to play volleyball at Illinois State University. "It's definitely a big relief, especially after such a stressful experience," Club said Sunday. Club averaged 3.20 kills and 2.97 digs per set. As the Clippers finished 25-6 this season, they did not have an opportunity to participate in the postseason due to a positive COVID-19 test in the program. Also from high school volleyball, new crew carries Lisbon to new heights. On more than one level, an extended run by the Lisbon High School volleyball team this season looked like an unlikelihood in August. If it wasn't the COVID-19 pandemic that threatened to shut down any team at any time, it was youth and varsity inexperience. "It's been a season that I never thought would happen, and results that few people thought would happen," Lions coach Lance Kamaus said. "Now we've got to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of us." Winners of 22 of their last 23 matches, the 10th-ranked Lions at 26-4 host WACO at 25-7 in a Class 1A regional semifinal tonight at 7. When the Lions lost with a senior-laden lineup in last year's regional final, it appeared their state tournament window had closed. Not so. Instead, they followed it with perhaps their best season in school history. And with four sophomore starters, the best might be yet to come. "With the 8 kids we run out there, we play pretty good defense," Kamaus said. "Kia Kilberg and Peyton Robinson really anchor our defense, and that gives us a lot of opportunities to swing." Class 1A and 2A regional semifinals are tonight, with winners advancing to Wednesday's regional finals. The highest-ranked Area 1A team, number 7 Springville, at 25-4, hosts Clinton Prince of Peace at 20-9. Among 2A-ranked squads, number 8 Dyersville Beckman at 29-9 welcomes number 10 Hudson at 27-7, and number 14 West Branch at 19-12 meets Van Buren County at 11-14 at Mediapolis. The highlight of Lisbon's late-season surge was a Tri-Rivers Conference Tournament Championship on October 17. "That was three tough wins against three quality opponents," Kamaus said. "You want to be playing your best volleyball at the end of the season, and in many ways, we are." Beckman has reached the three state tournaments, including a run to the 2A finals last year. To get back to the Alliant Energy powerhouse, the Blazers most likely have to navigate through two matches against foes from the mighty North Iowa Cedar League, Number 7, Sumner Fredericksburg, is the probable regional final opponent. 9 NICL teams are ranked. Those teams are very good, said Beckman coach Todd Troutman, who picked up his 600th career win earlier this season. They're similar to the teams on the east side of the WAMAC. But one thing about our team, we've stepped up to big challenges all year. I don't think they're intimidated by anything. I don't think they'll be afraid. Your Dear Abby today is entitled Hidden Phone Used Nonstop Annoys Colleague. Dear Abby, I am unsure how to handle a coworker who is constantly on their cell phone hidden between their legs during their 4-hour work shift. I have reminded them to leave their phone in their car since they have a hard time not checking it or texting during work hours. We have spoken several times about this unacceptable behavior, which improves for 2 days and then reverts back to using their cell phone as usual. Is this generational acceptable behavior that I'm missing? I'm in my mid-50s, and I can live without texting friends and family while I'm supposed to be working, but they seem to need to have their phone in their hands all the time. The manager ignores this behavior, so that's not an avenue I can pursue. Please help. And that's signed Peeved in Pennsylvania. And Abby responds, Dear Peeved, is there a policy in your employee handbook that forbids the use of cell phones during business hours? If there isn't, this may be the reason your manager is ignoring your coworker's behavior. Because your manager refuses to discourage what the person is doing, you have no choice but to ignore it and concentrate on your own tasks at hand. I only hope that your jobs aren't collaborative, which would impede your productivity. And from the community page today, we have 3 Eastern Iowa briefs. The first from Cedar Rapids, entitled Part of Cedar Valley Nature Trail Scheduled to be Closed on Tuesday. The Cedar Valley Nature Trail will be closed between Bowling Street and the Tate Cummins Sports Complex on Tuesday for utility tree work. Trail closure signs will be placed near the entrances of the closure. Work is anticipated to take 1 day, with the trail reopening the following day. In case of inclement weather, the work will be performed Wednesday, and the trail will be reopened on Thursday. And reserve your spot for the inaugural Bruce Moore Halloween Adventure. Families are invited to dress up in costume Saturday for an afternoon of fun at the first Bruce Moore Halloween Adventure. Children will enjoy participating in a craft, listening to Halloween stories, and trick-or-treating outside the iconic 17th century mansion. Between activities, children and parents are invited to explore the historic estate. Space will be extremely limited, with only 15 families each time slot, which start every half hour from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Admission is $30 per family. Check-in will occur by car before parking. Only one car is allowed per family. Masks will be required for everyone over the age of 2. Spatial distancing and other mitigation strategies to ensure a safe environment will be enforced. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit brucemoore.org or call 319-362-7375. That's 319-362-7375. And Angel Wings zippered hoodies are available at the NCSML Museum store. 2 years ago, Angel Wings began popping up on the side of buildings in Czech Village. Angels in the Village is the brainchild of Mary Kay Novak McGrath, who owns several properties in the village. The idea was to add some fun and color to the area while giving people another reason to visit. McGrath's idea has inspired others, including master folk artist Marge Nagel. Her 2020 Christmas ornament, designed and produced exclusively for the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library, features an angel. Now, Edu Skateboard Shop has partnered with the NCSML to bring McGrath's Angel Wings from building to backs with hooded sweatshirts. Edu Skate owner Lindsay Podzimek designed the Angel Wings, which will be printed on the back of purple zip-up hooded sweatshirts to be sold exclusively at the award-winning NCSML Museum store. The sweatshirts are available to pre-order now through Saturday for $39.95. They are available in sizes small through 3XL. To order, call the NCSML at 319-362-8500 or shop online at store.ncsml.org. Hoodies will be available for delivery after November 14. And our pet of the week is Lithium. Lithium is a young male domestic short hair cat available for adoption at the Cedar Rapids Animal Care and Control at 7241 Washington View Parkway Southwest. He needs toys that can hold up to his roughness, but once he gets his energy out, he's ready to be held and snuggled. The shelter will make appointments for adoption inquiries, but is closed to the public because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Call 319-286-5993 for more information. And from the community page, an article entitled Witching Hour, Iowa City Organizers Conjure a Festival Online. As in folklore, Iowa City's Witching Hour is a time for pushing boundaries, and the boundaries are being treated differently in this tricky pandemic season. Instead of sweeping through downtown sidewalks, streets, and venues, this year's Creativity Festival is going online, with virtual programming beginning at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday. It's still a ticketed event, but organizers don't want finances stretched thin throughout the creative community to be an issue, so they've adopted a pay-what-you-can model. 7 levels of suggested prices range from $5 for arts participants to $120 for benefactors, with lots of low-pay options in between. Ticket holders receive access to both days' sessions, and the link will be good for 72 hours. The event has been evolving since its 2015 debut, but the concept remains the same. Performances and discussions that explore the unknown, discuss the creative process, and showcase new work from local, Midwest, and national voices representing a variety of races, ethnicities, and gender parity. By now, many of them don't wait for an invitation. They reach out to the festival, said organizer Andre Perry, age 43, of Iowa City. He's executive director at the Englert Theater, which is presenting the event with Little Village magazine. The participants are, among the main voices, are Black Belt Eagle Scout, the recording project of Catherine Paul, who grew up on the Swinomish Indian Reservation in Northwest Washington State. The project has earned accolades as favorite new musician and debut album in 2018. And Tamika Cage Conley, a graduate of the fiction program of the Iowa Writers Workshop, where she was awarded the Truman Capote Fellowship and the Provost Postgraduate Visiting Writer Fellowship in Fiction. She is at work on her first novel, which considers the untimely deaths of African-American men over 6 decades, beginning in the early 1940s in northern Louisiana. She is an assistant professor of English and creative writing at Oxford College of Emory University in Oxford, Georgia. And Dawson Davenport from the Meskwaki settlement near Tama and a University of Iowa graduate with a degree in art. Davenport owns the Indigenous People's Art Gallery and Cafe, the nonprofit, the Indigenous Art Alliance, and the Dapien Apparel Clothing Brand. He also hosts a weekly #StayHomeLiveVirtualPoetryReadingSeries promoting Indigenous artists. And Heavy Color, a modern music ensemble founded by composer-producers Ben Cohen and Sam Woldenberg, based in Toledo, Ohio. They recently composed the soundtrack for the Rights of Nature documentary Invisible Hand, produced by Mark Ruffalo. Donez Smith, an award-winning writer from St. Paul, Minnesota, whose third poetry collection, Homey, was published by Gray Wolf in January 2020. And Beatrice Thomas, star and creator of Black Benatar's Black Magic Cabaret and principal of Authentic Arts and Media. Thomas, who lives in San Francisco, is a national multidisciplinary artist, cultural strategist, social justice drag queen, and creative producer. And Stacy Walker of Cedar Rapids, the first African American elected to the Linn County Board of Supervisors. Throughout his career, Walker has worked for several political campaigns at the congressional, gubernatorial, and presidential level, and continues to serve as a political activist and writer. Witching Hour is in constant evolution, Perry said. The festival, by design, is a reflection of where we are as a people, where we are as a culture, and where we might go. Those questions, those concepts, the expressions that we might have around them, the discussions we might have around them, are constantly in evolution. So we're always determining how to create the best platform for the artists, the thinkers, the community members, to have that expression and to have those discussions, he said. Hopefully, we've gotten better at creating an environment where lively expression and discussion can happen. It also serves as a counterpoint to the city's other festivals, from the Block Party and Iowa Arts Festival to Mission Creek, he noted. The difference is that Witching Hour is really asking the audience to consider where they are in a given moment of their lives, consider their relationship to creativity, and to consider their relationship to their community or to their communities, Perry said. It's slightly more demanding and may yield different rewards because of that. It's almost like going through a seminar or workshop, a full-on immersive experience. With that, it brings a different vibe to the Iowa City scene. I think the energy it brought was always generally positive, but also somewhat serious, because you're thinking about the world and our place in it, Perry said. The timing also is different, since it's typically held in mid to late October, when the weather is turning. It's getting colder, he said, and it's like, what do we need to think about before we go indoors for a few months? This year's event still will feature creative minds discussing their processes and presenting new works for the new age. But instead of gathering presenters and audiences in the same physical space, audiences will be viewing pre-recorded videos online. Conceptually, it was natural the way we're pulling it off. In practice, it's just as hard, he said, to coordinate interaction between the producers and contributors, whether virtually or in person. Perry noted his team is pretty versatile, since they're used to working with live and recorded sound and visuals. Still, taking the festival online has required them to take on new skills. Conceptually, Witching Hour is very much like storytelling in the way that we sequence things, so a lot of those skills are applicable to this new world. The challenge is that the format is a little bit new, but we're pretty ready to go, he said. Monetizing a virtual festival versus an in-person festival is different and difficult to judge, so the organizers cut the budget from between $45,000 and $50,000 for the typical live event to between $15,000 and $16,000 for this year's online offering. The artists still will be paid for their efforts to create new material for the audiences and spark new conversations, but viewers can pay on a sliding scale, which will bring in less revenue. We don't want anyone turned away, Perry said. We always want access across the board to be as open as we can afford it to be, particularly thinking about younger people in high school and college students who do not have a lot of disposable income. Outreach efforts also are aimed toward the creative and artistic communities, who sometimes do have incomes and sometimes don't, Perry said. In many ways, it's a festival for artists with a capital A, but also for those of us who have an artistic practice that are maybe not as open about it, which is any of us and all of us who want to express. We say it's for artists, arts, workers, curious minds, and everyone connected to supporting artistic industries. The curious minds, that's for everyone else who just want to be involved in a really special conversation and experience. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October 26th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. Thank you for listening.